to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm your host, Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer, and with me in studio today, along with our producer, Phil, the one, the only, Keith Pandolfi.
Hi, Burl. Good to be here.
Well, you had some big news on the food beat this week.
Yeah, we five Cincinnati chefs, and well, four chefs and one really good barkeep were named semifinalists for the 2026 James Beard Awards.
That's big news.
It's very big news.
Five semifinalists from Cincinnati.
Yeah, we're punching above our weight here right now. One of them, Dave Willicks from Baker's Table from Northern Kentucky, which I cannot confirm this, but I'm pretty sure that might be the first Northern Kentucky restaurant to ever be make the semifinalist round.
Well, you better do some reporting.
I've been trying. Well, I'll figure it out. I'll get some answers. But
well, before we talk about how significant that is, I will tee up our special guest. And our special guest this week is one of those semifinalists, and that is Sarah Dworak, who is the owner, chef proprietor of Sudova.
Yes, one of my favorite people. And if you've read my stuff, one of my favorite restaurants here in town. Very good Eastern European food. And she really brings a sense of home into her restaurant. A lot of pictures of her family hanging on the walls, her grandmother's table. You considered her grandmother's table in the front. So,
all right. Place. Well, I'm looking forward to bringing in Sarah. But before we do, so five semifinalists just from Greater Cincinnati. Yeah. There are states that wish they had five.
Yeah.
Or have none.
Yeah.
So would you say that, you know, this is something now we just come to expect, that our culinary scene has arrived?
I think so. I think in the past, since I started working here 5 years ago, we've had semifinalists every year. I think this might be the second time we've had five. But if they had come out yesterday and we were not, and if we weren't on the list, I would have been shocked. We're getting a lot of national attention. I've said this before. We're getting the New York Times coming here. We're getting Food and Wine coming here. People are really curious to see what's going on in this city. And, some of these restaurants are they're not, you know, all white tablecloth places like that. They're all over the board. You've got Nolia Kitchen with his takes on Southern, the Global South. You've got, of course, Sudova with Eastern European food. And it's just a really exciting time here right now. And I think that we should come to expect this now.
Well, I'm excited to talk to Sarah. So how about we bring her in and let's find out more about Sudova.
Sounds great.
Special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And I got to say, we are laughing right now because we have with us, as promised, Sarah Dworak, the owner, proprietor, chef, everything of Sudova, who has just learned this week she's a nominee for a James Beard Award. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
And man, we've been laughing, like pre-recorded laugh. We have covered so many topics already.
Yes.
Before we started, we might get into that later. But first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
What is it like?
It's been a wild 24 hours. I was telling Chef Jeff at Nolia, like, we're on a group thread with all the nominees. Like, I've never had 70 text messages in my life. And it was never something I ever thought would happen to me and to us, for sure.
Why is that? I mean, what?
Because I'm not like a classically trained chef. This is the first restaurant that I've owned and operated where I've cooked like on a gas stove in a kitchen ever. And you know, I didn't think that my skill set was that level.
Huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. I thought it was, but if you can feel that way. You know, the thing, if you don't know Sarah, you should thank her right away because she is the person who brought pierogies to Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes.
You're originally from Youngstown, yes. which actually has a strong Eastern European community yes. where you would get pierogies. Mm-hmm. Tell me about when you, was it just something when you moved here, you decided we need pierogies here? We got to, you know.
Yeah. So I moved here mid, late 2000s and I started shopping at Findlay Market. And I just never, I did not see like any Eastern European food at all. There's also like a lot of Italian mm-hmm. and like I said, Greek food in Youngstown too, but it just was so different here. There's just a lot more like ethnic food in Youngstown because of the melting pot of all the immigrants coming together to work in the steel mills. That's basically why Youngstown is made up the way it is.
Yep. And when you start, what year did you start Babushka?
2012.
2012. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you were selling them out of a window and over the Rhine for a little
while.
Yeah,
so actually I started selling them at Findlay Market. Yeah. And Mr. Madison loved the idea. He knew what they were. And so he let me use his food license. And I sold pierogi like Thanksgiving weekend of 2012 on a folding table outside of Madison's. And then I started renting space every summer and I would sell them out of the tent. And then we rent space at night to make them in like different commissary kitchens, church basements, whatever we could find. And then Findlay Kitchen came along in 2016. So we were one of the founding members there.
Okay. That's an incubator mm-hmm. kitchen that they run out of Findlay Market that's mm-hmm. launched so many great restaurants.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And we were there for 4 years. And in 2019 is when I opened the pierogi window that turned into Vodka Bar.
And Vodka Bar, it was first year it was named one of the best bars in America by Esquire magazine. Is that
yes,
true?
Yes, it was. It was 2020.
Yeah.
So one you've of known, 27 best bars in America. Yes.
You've known fame. You've
yes,
been here.
Yeah. It was a different situation, yes. I think, because we were not able to really fully take that press and use it because we were all shut down. It was the
true.
Pandemic.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
So we were only open for 4 months in 2020.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, long story short, you ended up closing Vodka Bar in a year
or 2024.
2024.
Five-year run.
What, did you already know you were going to open up Sudova when yes. you were doing this? Okay.
Yes. So,
and
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the dishes you could get at Vodka Bar, you can now get at Sudova.
Yeah. Some of our greatest hits for sure.
Yeah.
Like our cabbage rolls. Those are my bubbas. Our halushki, which is like a cabbage and noodles. It's kind of what I grew up eating as like buttered noodles. Always had cabbage in it. Of the borscht, of course. Our medovik, the honey cake. Yep. Those are things that I've brought over.
Okay.
So you said that you were you moved here and you were shopping at Findlay Market when you did your assessment that mm-hmm. this is a place that could use some Eastern European menu items. What brought you here? Did you come here to open a to become a chef?
I did not. So I from Youngstown, I followed a boy to Scottsdale, Arizona, and then we got married and then we moved here for his job. And I was just happy to be a car ride instead of a plane ride away from my family. So it was hard being away, you know, growing up with just, again, the small town I'm from, to go from Youngstown, Struthers, Ohio, to Scottsdale, Arizona is like cultural whiplash. So,
What were you doing when you were in Arizona?
So I am actually a biology, geography, devil major.
Okay.
And so this was 2004, and I graduated college in 2002, and it was a digital mapping job, a GIS job that I was doing, like digitizing maps for
which leads right into restaurant owning. And
this is what I'm saying when I'm when I'm nominated for a beard award. Like this is not
all right.
This is
so,
not the trajectory.
So you said I'm not a classically trained chef.
No.
I've two questions related to that.
Mm-hmm.
Is the greater Cincinnati chef scene welcoming to people like you, or is there a little bit of a, well, she's a hobbyist or she lucked into this?
I will say that I consider myself to have been until recently, like on the periphery of the chef group here. again, I'm not, I haven't been working up in the ranks of kitchens, right?
I don't, didn't sue chef for
I blah, know, blah, blah, blah. No, yeah. I have like no known other than self-taught knife skills. There's nothing like that. So I think you have to be in that environment to create that sort of network, which I am not. And then, so that's why, I mean, there have definitely been so many people that have been so helpful along the way. One of the first people to bring my pierogi into an establishment was Mike Stankovich at Longfellow, and he's been selling them since they opened. He's just been so helpful to me.
Also a nominee this year.
Also, yes. Again, semifinalist this year. It was a finalist last year.
That's for amazing.
Outstanding.
Outstanding achievement in beverage
hospitality.
Yeah. So, not a classically trained chef. This is part two of the question. Obviously, you know your way around a kitchen. With you must have learned through the family, right?
Yes. So my mom and I like to cook. I learned to make pierogi with my dad's mother, my Bubba. She passed away in 1987, though. So I was 7 years old, and she and I were so, so close. And it was a devastating loss for our family. She was only 62 years old. And after surviving like Stalin's Holodomor, she was starved by Stalin. Then she was taken prisoner by the Germans, and she was in a displaced persons camp and met my grandfather, and they had their first son, and then came across the United States and made enough money to buy a house and learn English.
Came from Ukraine.
Yes. Well, they were in Germany after the war.
Okay.
Because they were taken, my Bubba's village was raided and they were taken prisoner to work on a German farm during the war. So, but they were already being starved by Stalin, and, you know, this had just ended. So my Bubba used to say that she ate better as a laborer on a German farm than she did at home because Stalin was stealing all of the food. So, like, to make it through all of this and learn English and learn how to drive a car, and then to die of a car accident injury in 1960 at 62 years old is just, it was awful. It was awful for our whole family. So, but she's the one who taught me how to make pierogi. And I know, you know, when I make the kielbasa and sauerkraut or I make the stuffed cabbage rolls, it smells like her house at Christmas every time.
Aww.
And I love that. I love the smell. It just, it takes me right back. That and a little bit of mothballs. So it's just like, it's all mixed in there.
Do people use mothballs anymore? I don't think so.
Like, I still smell them every once in a while. But
because it lingers for decades,
yeah,
Keith.
If you walk the dog, sometimes I walk the dog and I'll just walk by a house and it's still coming, it's still wafting through the windows. So.
Sorry. Yes. So that and the root cellar. So the apples, you know, when I smell like apples in the basement. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then
my mom, she definitely, you know, she cooked a lot. She cooked three meals a day for us, you know, growing up and everything. So, and my grandmother, her mom, she used to host dinner parties and want me to cook. I don't know. We would host. So my grandmother was an archaeology major. She didn't go to school until she was 50. And so she would have like the archaeology class and the professor over for like a Christmas dinner, and I would cook dinner for them. We would do like standing rib roasts and stuff. It was so funny.
You and your sister.
My sister was there, but it was mostly me and my grandma putting it together. Yeah, I like to entertain.
Okay.
I thought creme brulee was so posh.
Well, so a lot of people kind of keep alive family traditions like that, recipes, especially, you know, passing along heritage and things like that. But to go from what I would call that, you know, like those family traditional dishes to the menu you have right now at Sudova seems like a big step. So how were you able to, you said you taught yourself how to use a knife. Like, did you, on your own experiment with recipes, did you have a mentor? How did you build up from what was the vodka bar to this, you know?
I would say in terms of the menu, there were some of them that I wanted to stay the same, like the halushki and the cabbage rolls, the borscht. That's very traditional. I don't want that to change. I feel like you can still have, just elevating the plating is enough. I don't think it needs to be changed so much from what it is, because when you taste it and you remember that, it's like that's what that dish is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be, you know, stuffed with whatever else. But it's supposed to be just those three meats combined with some tomato sauce with a little bit of sugar in it. Like, that's what it's supposed to be. So in terms of the other dishes, I didn't want it to all be so traditional, but I wanted to maybe like take the basics of Eastern European food and kind of modernize them a little bit. So just again, like with the Lebensseal, which means bread and salt, it's what we call our bread service. So we have the Borodinsky bread with buckwheat honey butter and green onion, which you always have on a zakuski or like an appetizer tray. Bread and salt is like a welcome gift that you would give to somebody who moved into your neighborhood. You would come over with a loaf of bread and salt. And so it's also welcoming people in. And instead of like a white bread, I thought the Borodinsky bread would just be more interesting and taste more robust and have more flavor to it with the buckwheat honey butter. So it's like stuff like that where I'm just kind of using maybe a different ingredient, but still it's bread and salt. if that makes sense.
It does.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm also curious when you you survived the pandemic.
Yeah.
The restaurant business is known to be challenging, way more closed than open, it seems. And we're in an area where I won't say it's competitive, but there are a lot of chef-driven restaurants. Was it daunting? Mm-hmm. Or were you just like, I'm doing this?
What
was going through your mind when you decided, you know, I'm going to go for the full restaurant now in a competitive market,
yeah,
in a, you know, industry that, you know, is notorious for, you know, chewing up people and spitting them out. Talk about that a little
sure.
bit.
This is a two-part answer. So I would never have thought to do this ever. A friend of mine who owns a restaurant called Houndstooth in Benton Harbor, Michigan, her name is Cheyenne. She and I have worked together over the years, and we've actually become really close friends. And we were having brunch a couple years ago at the old Salazar space. And I was just talking to her. She, you know, was coming into town and she was leaving. And I was saying, you know, I love what you do. It's just, your restaurant is amazing. And, you know, I could never really do what you do. And she's like, Sarah, you're already doing it. Like, you have figured out a way in the pandemic to turn a closet of a kitchen space into a full service restaurant. And you figured it out with no, we're working with 3 induction burners and a gas oven, an electric oven. Like, we have no gas to work with. And we are serving 18 menu items out of this tiny kitchen, and seating people and using open table and, you know, just having to figure it out. And, you know, you are absolutely doing it. And when I heard her say that, I really believed it. And I thought to myself, wow, well, she thinks I can do it, then maybe I can. And there were several other iterations. Like, there was going to be, I was going to do in the space, I was going to do an orangery with like high tea. I don't know. It was just something that sounded interesting in the space out of these skylights. And I was like, I don't know how this is going to make any money. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, like.
Because you do high tea once.
You know, I'm like, maybe bridal parties. I don't know. You know, I was thinking.
I mean, Keith goes to high tea all the time.
I used to go with Mummy. Oh, yes, back in the day.
So I'm going to London in October and I've never had high tea. Going to do something. I'm going to open up a restaurant that I've never done. But I was like, you know, how you cut the cucumber sandwiches. Yeah. Anyway.
It's special. But again, every decade, maybe I would do it.
Right.
Or so, you know, my mother would do it.
Glad. I'm sure that everyone that is invested in me is happy I did not do that. And then,
I would have stopped you right away if you had told me that. Okay,
yeah. Then there was a group of guys that wanted to do an Italian wine bar, and they wanted me to do the food. And I just thought, well, I know Youngstown Italian food, but I'm not Italian, and I don't think Cincinnati needs another wine bar. So finally it became, well, why don't we take the restaurant concept of vodka bar and make it a full-service restaurant where we can offer seats. And, you know, we had 3 tables and the rest was bar seats at Vodka Bar. So we have, you know, seats for 48 people. And that's how that came about. Oh, but to answer the other part of the question, I absolutely was what the am I doing through this? Because it was so scary at times where I really second guessed, like, what am I doing? Because it took us a long time to get the building permit because stuff was still getting worked out with the city, getting our plans approved because there was nothing in that building before. So we had to put everything in it. And I was just like, this is not a good idea. I can't believe I put all my money into it. Like, you know, all this money I saved, it's all in this now. What about if it doesn't work? And then also seeing, like, you know, Jordan and David, you know, Aperture and Wildweed, and they're just, they do such amazing work and their food is so delicious. And I would instantly get this feeling of, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. And the only way I got through all of it was to put my blinders on and just stay in my lane and just focus on the menu I wanted to make. Like, don't look at anything else. And that's really how I got through it, was just to not compare myself, because I'm not that. I'm very much this specific Eastern European interpretation.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of great way of putting it. I don't know if you had like imposter syndrome or what you felt like.
Oh, absolutely. I did. But
you also have a restaurant that is very, when you walk inside of this restaurant, it's as nice as any restaurant in Cincinnati. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
And it is very refined.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever think, like, when you were putting this concept together, I'm going to do something like very informal. I'm going to serve this food without the edible flowers and the, you know, the garnishes, instead of doing something so...
No, I wanted it to be elevated. Okay. I wanted it because the thing with Eastern European food is it's called, I mean, it is like home food. Like, you don't go to many restaurants to eat this kind of food in this country at all, let alone in like what we call the old country, right? There's just, why would you want to eat this? Why would you want to, you know, it's kind of like that mentality where you're eating this at home. You're not going out to a restaurant to eat it because your grandmother's making it. It's a family recipe. It's not something elevated like a French or Italian.
And what I love about the restaurant is that, yes, it's elevated, but it feels like home. Mm-hmm. You have pictures of your family hanging up all over on all the walls. You have your grandmother's dining room table in the front. So it's probably one of the most personal, you know, restaurants I've been to.
I guess, you know, I don't know how to be myself without being personal, you know, and I think that's why, like, a corporate or, you know, like a job in an office just never really resonated with me. I didn't know how to do that because I always, when I move through life, when like talking to people, I need to have a personal connection to what I'm doing for it to make sense, I guess.
Yeah. Every restaurant has to, I think, a good story is the most important thing to have when you're opening up a place.
Yes.
So I learned from your website that Sudova means judicial.
Mm-hmm.
Was that because you're on Court Street? Did you want to have some like
a nod wink, to wink, that? Yes.
Wink, wink tie-in?
A wink tie-in without being so on the nose.
Okay.
By saying like court, whatever, right? Just to be fun with it. And also it'd be a Ukrainian word.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, it's a, that's the, you know, feminine adjective. And, you know, with the courthouse being there, also with the war, you know, having justice for Ukraine.
Yeah.
I thought it was fitting.
Is there something that you could describe as a Ukrainian community in Cincinnati that?
There is a small one for sure. Yes. There's a, Cincy for Ukraine. They actually put on a, Ukrainian festival every summer. So yeah, we are here.
And have they embraced Sudova?
Yes. Yes. Which means the world to me. I will say at times the Eastern European community can sometimes be our worst critic because it, again, being from Eastern European countries, some of them just don't get, like, why are you serving that? Why would you do that? Why are you charging that much for that? This does not taste like my grandmother's. it's almost like I laugh now because I expect it. But for, there's many Ukrainians that have embraced it and made me feel so welcome and approved.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's yes. important. I mean, that's like, that's yes. the legit part of it, right?
And also with the menu, using Ukrainian words, because so much of the language was not even allowed to be spoken. You know, my Bubba is from a village in the Carpathian Mountains, so they were able to speak Ukrainian, but you had to speak Russian in the cities during like Soviet times. So I want to, you know, just when we say, when we, even when we're calling out the words in the kitchen, when we're calling out what dishes need to be fired, we're using the Ukrainian words. So it's like we're speaking it every day. And that's just one way to like keep it alive a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you also have the Vodka Bar. You have an excellent bar. You have an excellent bar, cocktail program. Mm-hmm. That's something that when you opened Vodka Bar, it seemed very focused on, yes. on the drinks.
Yes.
So I think we should talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
And, you know, how you came up with it. What was that extremely spicy cocktail I got? Or no.
The Axe of Perun.
What
the
is
one,
that?
The one with the pepperoncini vodka.
Yes. I love it so much. Yes. I hope that's still on the menu.
Thank you to our GM, Peyton. She is. Oh, yeah. She came up with that okay. with that cocktail. Yes. She...
Describe the cocktail again.
Yeah, so it is it is pepperoncini infused vodka with pickle juice, olive brine, a little bit of vermouth, and celery bitters.
Yeah, it's a meal.
Yeah, it's.
But yeah, going back to you, uh-huh. you were only doing vodkas at Vodka Bar for the most part, vodka cocktails.
Vodka cocktails and flights of infused vodkas. We had like over 30 infused vodkas that you can choose a set of four.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about the vodka program that you're doing at Sudova.
Right now, the vodka program is we have infused spirits. It's not just so focused on vodka now. So we have like an infused whiskey and infused gin. And so we create cocktails with those infusions.
Okay.
But like infused spirits is... as old as the spirit itself, especially because in the old country, you were just trying to mask the.
That's interesting. I think of that as being a new development, mm-mm. but not at all. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
not
tales all the time.
Yeah.
So for those who haven't been to Sudova, give us a recommendation of like, what should you order for your first experience?
Hmm.
Give us a owner chef.
Mm-hmm.
Like these are the things you want, your starter package, because you could spend a lot of time going through your, yeah, you could spend a lot of time going through that menu.
Yes, this is hard. Okay. The Sudova starter pack. Yeah. You know what? I think I would go with halushki.
And what is that?
That is the cabbage and noodles with okay. like the spatula. I would say, I mean, yes, the pelmeni, but I say for the vareniki. With the, I know we're going a little heavy with the carbs here, but I would say halushki vareniki. That is the potato and sauerkraut dumplings that has apple butter and pancetta and dill sour cream.
I want some right now.
Yeah. That's so good. Yes. So those two, I'd move on to our deconstructed chicken Kiev. So it is a...
Here is the unclassically trained yes. chef talking about a deconstructed what?
Who does she think she is? What a poser.
Well,
I think you secretly went to culinary school.
Did not,
this is
I
just
did
your
not.
Shtick. Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny how much to think of all the different things. I was going to do marine biology. I was going to do environmental law. I was going to do fashion design. It's just like all over the place. And this, it's just so funny. My geography professors and I are still like friends on Facebook, and they just love seeing what ended up happening with this degree. So, and then, so the reason why I deconstructed it is because there is a fail rate to having the chicken stuffed with butter and then breaded and fried. And when you cut it, it's supposed to squirt the butter out. So I thought, why do I want to squirt all these people in their nice clothes with butter, potentially?
Very practical concern. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I thought, why don't we bread the chicken? We'll brine it and bread it and we'll fry it and we'll just put the butter sauce on top with the peas, which is usually served alongside like the peas. And then there's usually like French fries, which we omitted. But, and then we just have like a nice arugula salad, but it's easier way.
Okay.
Easier way.
And you can present it differently.
Yes.
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 I mean, I feel like every time I go there, everybody's ordering the
hachapuri. Oh,
the,
yeah. Well, that's the, yes. The hachapuri is definitely
Is it Hachapuri?
Hachapuri. So
it
K.
Been mispronouncing it my whole life. Okay.
So it's a hard H. That K is a hard H. Like, so the Klib is spelled K H L I B.
You were secretly making fun of me the whole. That's what I've always said. Pronounce it that way.
I don't know.
Right. Do most people pronounce it the way I'm pronouncing it with a K?
They probably say Hachapuri. Yeah. All right. But I don't know. But it's a hard
apologies.
H sound.
Hachapuri.
Like.
Okay. Good to
there
know.
We go. That now we're getting very Eastern European.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
And describe that dish.
The hachapuri is a Georgian cheese bread boat. So it comes from this one particular
yes, that's
part.
That's the one I was thinking.
Yeah, of
so
good. Of Georgia that's like on the coast, and it's shaped like a boat, and it has three cheeses inside, and then an egg yolk.
An egg on top.
Uh-huh. And then like, you mix it all in.
Everything's better with an egg on top.
Yes. Yeah. So you mix the egg in with all the cheese, and then you rip off the sides and dip it in.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah.
And that's the thing about the restaurant. You're not just doing, it's not, you know, a lot of people describe it. It's a Ukrainian restaurant, but it's very much like an Eastern European restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing foods from Georgia and,
yes.
You know, even.
There's like Polish, like the ponchki, the donuts. We're using like yeah. Siberian bird cherry flour in it, which is fun. And, you know, it's a very unique taste. It looks like chocolate, but it tastes like cherry-ish almond bitter mm-hmm. taste. It's very fun. So again, it just plays on things that are have Eastern European ingredients, but say like our sour cream ice cream, we make it with sea buckthorn berries, which is a Siberian, like Northern Europe berry that's very tart. It's used mostly for medicinal purposes, but it tastes wonderful with the chocolate. It's kind of like a citrus-y
yeah.
with the brownie.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Keith, since you're so familiar with this, since you are a James Beard Award winner yourself.
Amazing.
Yes. We've got just the pedigree in this room right now. So, we learned yesterday the semifinalists. And what's the next step in this process? Does it go to like a round of finalists? Or
there will likely be a lot of judges coming to Cincinnati.
Oh, talk about that for a second.
Yeah, I mean, I can admit I'm a former judge, you know, what's going to happen now? You're going to see some people coming. Well, you won't know who they are, of course, but, they will send judges out, for each region. Our region is Great Lakes, strangely enough, which includes Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, and unfortunately Illinois, which has Chicago, which is always just pisses me off because it's just there's so many nominees from Chicago, and I feel like some people feel like we should be up, you know, we should be up to the task of going up against Chicago restaurants. I feel like maybe Chicago should get its own category, but that's just what I think.
Hmm.
But yeah, this is the semifinalist round. The judges will come around to all the restaurants here in Cincinnati. I don't know what happens after that because it goes off to the committee and then they decide the finalist and they will be announced. I don't have it in front of me, but it's March
31st.
So on March 31st, we will all learn who makes it to the finalist round. And being a semifinalist is a huge deal anyway.
Yeah.
So no matter what happens, you will have that. You can hang that on your door. You'll get a certificate. And, you know, that's a very big deal. So.
Yes. Yes. So you know the names and phone numbers of all the judges.
I don't. I really don't.
Send them
I mean,
to
it's
me
very,
after this.
Very secret.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I literally.
I'm sure they're gonna be calling you. Like.
No, I am not involved. I don't know who the judges are. I don't know anything. I just.
So you every day you got to be wondering, is there a judge eating tonight?
I'm guessing one already has or several because that's how we got nominated, right? That's how that works.
People have been. Yes. I mean, yes. And sometimes the judges are from the community. Sometimes they're from neighboring cities. It's all very mysterious.
Yes.
So
I don't know very much about this because I just never considered myself to be part of it. I was in awe of people who got nominated, but
well, what a great story. I mean, I don't want to call you the underdog because it's not like you were even competing for this. You just
I'm
wanted to serve
food. I'm
the only
woman in this list.
I didn't note that either. Yeah, that's
which is crazy to me.
And you've never really presented yourself like that before. And the stories I've done about you as somebody who just is not classically trained, mm-mm, who just went in there taking, you know, her grandmother's recipes and introducing them to the city. So you, you know, that's a really interesting way of looking at your career and how far you've come. I mean, one of the best restaurants in the city.
I mean, I love going out to eat is my sport, I would say. Like, yeah. I love it, right? So I think getting, it is the grandmother's part, but learning just like through eating food, right? How to make it more unique or taste better, you know,
Like, what are like two restaurants you can think of that do that same, have that same sort of perspective that, you know, taking their childhood or, you know, their culture. And I would say Jeff Harris.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, yes. If there's anyone else like you could think of that kind of has that same take.
Well, that was a good question. I'm just trying to think because like... No,
we can go back to it then.
Do you know other ones?
I think there's...
I think there are ones, but they're not like...
There are places like...
That do family food, right?
I feel like everybody who's nominated this year has brought something really unique to the city. I feel like Jeff has brought, you've got his New Orleans upbringing, but plus the foods of the Global South that he does an excellent job interpreting.
Well, and obviously Hideki.
And Hideki, you know, there are other Japanese restaurants in Cincinnati, but Hideki really has, not only does he have the Japanese restaurant, he has a Japanese fish market. He has fish market and a convenience store as well.
Yes.
Mike brought kind of a New York perspective, mm-hmm, to Cincinnati. A lot of some of the bar snacks that he serves at Longfellow, which are also pretty elevated, are inspired by, you know, more working class bar snacks that you would get in New York. So that's what I kind of like about this group, is everybody has brought something really unique.
Yes.
To the
table.
Which
tells the story about Cincinnati. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
So once you are publicized as a semifinalist, I'm imagining there's all of a sudden renewed interest in... Have you noticed reservations picking up? Are you having to ramp up for that?
We are preparing for it. I think at least we have this weekend to prepare because the snowstorm, everyone is canceling their reservation right now.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
So
pro tip.
If you got four-wheel drive or you live downtown and you can, you know.
Yes, yeah. You can get in on a Saturday night probably.
All right.
By the time,
you're all driving your big SUVs and your pickup trucks, your F-150s, you can make it to Sudova. Gosh darn
what
it.
What a great tip. Hit some of these, you know, you were talking about NOLA and some of these other, mm-hmm, places that are tough to get in. This is the time.
This is the time.
You know, the
weekend.
White death is upon us. Zig when everyone else zags, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Sarah, thanks again for coming in and chatting with us.
Thanks so much for having
congratulations
me.
Again.
Thank you.
What a great story. I'm in awe of, there's probably a lot of people that could pull together a menu, that can cook, that have ideas. It's the execution, right? Mm-hmm. To actually like do it. And you talked a little bit about as you're, you know, getting this building ready to go and the investment you're making and everything like that. I think that's the best part of this story. You know?
Yes. And it really is a test and it's a exercise in self-trust and just almost self like actualization in a way, because you can see, wow, I actually did do this. And it seems so insurmountable. And then when you're on the other side, it's like, okay, what, you know, I'm working on, a lunch thing.
Oh,
next door.
Breaking a little news. Uh-huh. Okay.
Next
Tell
door.
Us about that.
So I don't.
Now I got to write this down.
I don't have.
Breaking news onto That So Cincinnati podcast.
Yeah.
It will have a touch. It will have a pool of Eastern European, but I'm also looking to bring in the Italian Youngstown Greek stuff
vibe
that I grew up
okay.
with to kind of bring some of that food down here. like Briar Hill Pizza or pepperoni rolls.
Which kind of pizza?
Briar Hill Pizza. It's a neighborhood in Youngstown that has their Italian Fest every year. But the Briar Hill Pizza is like a almost like a deep Detroit, like it's not deep dish, but it's a thicker crust with the sauce. And you have roasted red and green bell peppers and Romano cheese. And that is it. Briar Hill Pizza.
I've never heard of that.
It's delicious.
I can't wait to
try it every time I go home.
This new place you're opening.
And also I would like to bring in Justin Singer is our culinary director now at Sudova. And he is a wonderful chef. And I would like to bring in some of the things he does, specifically with his he's like milling his own flour and wants to start his own project. And it would be fun to somehow tie this all in. So when I finished Sudova, I said, that was awful. I will never do this again. I am never putting myself through this again. It almost killed me. And then it's like, now I'm, you know, it's like past the, I've never had a child, but it's like you get past the pain of childbirth. And it's like, okay.
You have that amnesia.
I have that amnesia.
You're only focusing on the beautiful results and not that, but.
Yes. And now I'm going to do something else.
Do you have a timetable? I don't want to put you on the spot, but you did bring it up. So
yeah, so I was thinking, spring. I think with this, with having to ramp up and just be ready for what this nomination is going to do for us, it might be like a later summer thing. But it'll be like lunch, so be able to. It's not going to be dinner from what I see right now, but more of like a lunch spot.
I love it. I can't wait.
You heard it here first.
Yeah,
I hope. Right. I mean,
yes. We never get to break news here.
All right. Well, we love it when our guests break news.
Yeah.
Well, right. Sarah, thanks again. Congratulations.
Thank
again.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, Keith, I could talk to Sarah all day. She is inspirational and funny.
Isn't she great?
She is fantastic. What else have you been working on?
Well, today, you can find a brand new story I wrote about three very good Italian restaurants here in town. We seem to be having a bit of a red sauce renaissance here in Cincinnati right now.
Did you come up with that yourself?
It's in the story I stole it from. I stole it. That's plagiarizing myself.
Okay.
But
the red sauce renaissance.
The red sauce renaissance. We've got so many Italian restaurants opening up. We just recently saw Carbonola in Hamilton open. I mentioned that in the story. We've also have a new El Lupo restaurant in the old Rookwood Pottery space in Mount Adams. If you haven't been to Carmelo's in Covington yet, that's a great one.
My father-in-law loves that. We've been there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think when I moved here to Cincinnati 5 years ago, I was complaining about there weren't enough Italian restaurants, and here
we
are.
The world listened.
Somebody listened.
When Keith Pandolfi talks,
dang
people
it.
Listen.
Yeah. So, yeah, look at the story today. I think it's called, Italian Renaissance, three to try.
If it's not headlined Red Sauce Renaissance, we need to make a quick edit.
You can talk to my editor about that.
Talk to Rasputin Todd, your editor, about that.
Yeah.
Now you and I were both, switching, cuisines dramatically.
Mm.
You and I were both talking recently about how much we like the Corner Dumpling House.
Yeah.
Up there in, I think, Sims Township or...
Is it Montgomery? Or
north
is
of Montgomery.
It's near Montgomery?
Yeah, I think you leave the village of Montgomery.
Okay.
Heading north on Montgomery Road.
To be safe, we'll say Sims Township.
Yeah. People call that area Harper's Point.
Yes.
But yeah. that's not a legit governmental,
But for the listeners, I think that's what they'll recognize. It's a great restaurant. I went there just because they have soup dumplings, which is one of these things I've really missed since I moved to Cincinnati. And they're exactly what they sound like. They're little dumplings that you poke a little hole in them and then you slurp up your soup and they're just...
Yeah, the liquid, the soup is in the dumpling.
Yeah.
There's even like a little... They have like a little instruction card for how to eat
the soup.
How
to eat it, yeah.
Yeah.
And how they make them is they wrap them... like it's basically like a little bouillon cube that they wrap into the dumpling and then warm up and then it melts into a soup. So very good. But it's not just... All of their dumplings are fantastic, but you've also had a lot of their entrees.
No, we got the I forget what it's called now, but it comes out in a bowl on top of flame. it's not a stone bowl. That's okay, different, but yeah. And so I guess that would count as an entree, but the rest of the time we're, you know, we tried some of the buns. Yeah. I had the spicy beef bun that was just fantastic. Lauren, my wife, is all about the condiments, and they have all the sauces you know, you gotta, I think the instruction card tells you how to layer the sausage. They bring you a spoon for your dumpling, and you're right, you got to poke a little hole in it.
Yeah.
Or you just kind of bite it and it explodes everywhere, which, as we learned from Sarah, you don't want stuff squirting out at your customers.
Exactly. So, yes. Got to be careful.
Yes.
Proceed with caution. But it's got a great feel. It's a fun restaurant, and it's just a good-looking restaurant inside. I don't know if they take reservations, but if they do, make one, because there have been lines out the door.
I don't think they take reservations. You got to go in and check in. And okay. Both times we went, they said expect about a 40-minute wait.
40-minute?
But it ended up being a lot faster than that.
Okay.
Yeah, they take your cell phone number, so you can, like, mill around the strip mall. And
is there a bar in the strip mall you could go to? Is there anywhere you could go
no,
and drink
you know,
and
we
wait?
Did. We went and shopped at Fresh Thyme Market, as I call it.
Ah, yes. Yes.
Fresh Thyme Market.
Thyme, yes.
They had a sale on, like, supplements. So anyway.
Yeah.
But yes, that is a great little gem in the city. So you mentioned that you were glad they opened up because you hadn't had dumplings like that for a while. Coming back from New York, it's been 5 years, you said, almost,
yeah.
or more.
Yeah.
So you're like crossing things off the list. You wished for more Italian restaurants. You got them. What would you like to see next? What Ooh. Is Cincinnati's food scene just desperately crying out for?
A Jewish deli.
Ah!
A really good Jewish deli.
You know what? I agree with you.
Yeah, it's time. We are. That's the one thing we're really behind on. We do not have a good Jewish deli.
All right. Well, when Keith talks, like I said, people listen. So I bet this time next year, you and I will be interviewing the James Beard nominee for Best Jewish Deli.
I hope so. I hope so.
All right. Well, so we wrap things up?
Yep.
Let's do it. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Our producer today, none other than Phil Didion.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com, click on the subscribe button to see a special offer for new subscribers.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.